should an audit be used to punish a basketball team? This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Trying to expand something besides my waistline? Medicaid expansion's back again. This is Representative McKay.
The GOP comes to Utah for a Republican debate. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner from the Capitol, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and on the political left is State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
From the Capitol, hello.
And on the political right, my good friend, Representative Dan McKay.
From my office, hello.
All right, I'm going to go right into it, Representative McKay. People will know that listen to this program that I'm a University of Utah both alum and currently work there as an associate dean at the Eccles School of Business.
Really?
And, there's a little chitter-chatter in the hallway about this, what feels like a retaliatory audit. Comments, please.
Well, okay, so I'm going to step into the University of Utah gets $340 million appropriated from the state every year. 17.25% of the athletic department is public funds. So it's not making a ton of money for the university like everybody thinks it does. It's not a profit-making venture. And so it is appropriate for organizations of the state who receive subsidy from the state to be audited. Should they be audited tomorrow or should they be audited next week is always the debate. I would argue that based on the most sensitive recent factors, there was probably a more compelling argument to make the audit today rather than make it next week. But the audit was coming. And at some point, when you look at how athletics and the academic side of the University of Utah have not been on the same page in front of legislators in the past, that is the cause of the audit. Does it look fantastic from where it was ordered? No. Is the public perception of it great? No. Am I 100% convinced it's going to find this evil smoking gun that the athletic department is wasting taxpayer money? They're probably wasting a little because I think everyone does. Mm-hmm. And we'll clean up some of those inefficiencies. But at the end of the day, the fact that someone says, well, this has never been audited before, it's like, yeah, that's not the only element of state government that's receiving hundreds of millions of dollars that hasn't been audited before. The fact that it hasn't been audited before is somewhat frustrating as a lawmaker's perspective. Yeah. We should be auditing these programs and others every year.
Jim, the timing just smells like a rat.
Look, let's get to the bottom of what we're talking about here. BYU has some really dirty basketball players.
The rivalry comes right in.
They did some really nasty, miserable stuff.
But every team does, Jim. So
but BYU is especially blessed this year with some real dirty players. So there was an incident, and from the U's athletic department perspective, this was a culmination of a lot of incidents, and there is this heated rivalry they have. Let's face it, BYU is sad because they're off on their own in some never-never land of no conference that they're trying to find their way, and I hope they do. And the U has risen and is now an official contending member of the Pac-12. I think that's important to set up that. So what happens? The U athletic department calls BYU after contract is already signed and cancels the basketball game.
Yeah.
And that may or may not have been the right thing to do. But one thing for sure, BYU fans who hold the power of state government ought not to use audits as a punishment tool. This isn't about auditing the dollars. That may be a side benefit that may come in there. This is punishment to BYU and to Chris Hill and to the University of Utah and the basketball team because they canceled that basketball game. And that, my friends, is not right.
So I would just say from the political middle that what drives me nuts is the division, that you're taking the flagship university that does so much good for this state, for the
BYU
economy. No. University of Utah, research, the medical center, all that it represents to this state, and creates division between the university and Capitol Hill. And I don't think that's good for the state. And I would prefer to see the legislature, if they've got some issues, to talk about it, work it through. You've got a great leader in President Pershing. don't do this public, you know, BYU-Utah rivalry nuts.
I actually think that's probably, you know, hindsight is always the benefit. But remember, you know, I get tagged out personally because I made some comments, Jim, and Jim was sitting next to me when I made these comments about avoiding athletics becoming the center focus of the university, right?
Yeah.
And so I've been called out on social media and these kinds of things for this issue. I receive threatening emails daily for one reason or another about, you know, all these things that people would like to do to me for one reason or another. But that being said, I mean, because people are passionate about their sports.
Yeah, this hits a tender point.
Yeah. The idea is that athletics should not be the important part of the organization. And I think what I said, I stand by it.
May I just say, it was wonderful to see the Utes beat UCLA and USC this past weekend. You know, that's good for our state.
Yeah.
Whether you're a BYU fan, Utah fan, it's good for our state.
I want to say something in defense of Dan. So the setting here is the presidents are coming before our education committee and their higher ed props, I think is what it was. And they all give their 5-minute, 10-minute pitch and it's just going back and forth. And everybody around that horseshoe table is going, well, I want to talk about basketball. I want to ask about that. So Pershing's pretty much wrapping up, and Representative McKay says, look, there's an elephant right here in the room, and I want to talk about it. I mean, he didn't use these words, and he said, what's going on here? And I think it was, I think that question is appropriate. This is an issue.
Yeah. It's a lot of money, and the public.
The audit was a terrible, stupid legislative stunt, but bringing the issue up and saying to the president, give us your 2 cents on this. Nobody else had the guts to open that can of worms, and I think they're worms that should have been on display.
Okay, I got another sort of partisanship issue, but instead of being between Utes and Cougars, it's between Republicans and Democrats.
That's an interesting party, right?
Yeah.
Utes and Cougars, I like it.
This is the bipartisan makeup of the Legislative Audit and Management Committee, and for our listeners, I don't know what the ratios are. You guys will know it. But there's a lot more Republicans on Capitol Hill, and they don't have proportional representation on the Legislative Audit and Management Committee. There's a bill, HB 220, to make it proportional, which would basically eliminate several Democrats from the committee. Is that right, Jim?
Look, it's LeVar Christensen's bill. And the audit committee has traditionally been split 50-50. And if ever there was a time where we need an audit committee that is 50-50, it is at this moment. To put everything into the hands of one party, and let's go into the future a little ways and say it's all Democrats, and you can't even get an audit performed where it's needed, so you get everybody in the mix working together in caucuses together with their friends, and an audit can't even be called, that I understand why the split is different on regular committees, and maybe it's fair, but we don't want to go down that road. It's just too tempting.
Dan, it passed the House. Where were you on the vote?
I voted against it.
Okay.
I thought it was overly partisan for what reason? I mean,
the left, right, and middle all agree on this.
Yeah. So I mean, nobody could make an argument that the business of the state or the audits of the state had been negatively impacted because this committee was overly one partisan or another. I'm sure it forced discussions that were harder to have or whatever, but you haven't seen it be a problem.
My feeling is that there are certain areas of the state where you need to get away from, you know, the partisanship and just do something that actually helps the minority because the majority has so much power.
Just to wrap up that for a second, I want to throw out some kudos to Brian King and Gene Davis. I have seen and I have been frustrated sometimes when they aren't as partisan and as rah-rah on issues. And they understand that the majority is the majority. And they get through these issues, I think, with a great deal of respect. There has never been a tie on the audit committee. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to both sides. This is a terrible, terrible path to get down.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Representative Dan McKay, State Senator Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we're going to talk about more things on Capitol Hill and the presidential race.
This is Jim DeBacchus at the Capitol on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is both sides of the both sides of the aisle, and we are here at Capitol Hill. And I wanted to cover a few quick bills, just get your sense of them. The first one I want to talk about is SB 189. This is Senator Urquhart's bill that deals with the abolishing of the death penalty. I tell people the story of touring the state prison one time and actually going in the room where we had the firing squad and seeing the Kevlar wall at the back and the little holes where they put the rifles through just chilled my spine, Dan. I'm not a big death penalty fan.
Yeah. You know, I would like to take the far right position on this, but I'm against the death penalty, I think, the way we're using it today. Mm-hmm. I just don't think the death penalty itself has become mired in the appeals process and all these other things, and so that's concerning. But I've been in the same room and felt the same feelings, number two.
Yeah.
But three, I'm pretty jealous about who's supposed to kill who. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, and this part of this will be okay with Jim, and then the other part, Jim will roll his eyes. But I legitimately believe that there is a God in heaven who takes it as his responsibility and his duty to decide who comes in and who leaves this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I'm really nervous about the government being involved in the killing individuals.
Interesting. We marry each other because I don't think government gives life. It shouldn't take life.
Yeah.
And besides, it's fiscally a better decision.
It just doesn't. The way we are currently using the death penalty, it's more expensive, candidly, than keeping people alive and nursing them through their old age.
Jim, what would you add in terms of the perspective from the left?
I'm just right there. I mean, the only caveat I would add to the discussion is I think there is one exception, and that is people ought to be able to
volunteer.
Pick their own life and say, you know what, I'm over.
I'd rather not sit here.
I'm over. I'm making the decision on my own. Give me the
pills.
So you'd
say physician-assisted suicide potentially.
Yeah, I'm there. I mean, I've seen too many people go through this, and I'm there for
that. What do you predict for the Urquhart bill?
It's going to pass the Senate.
And die in the House, Dan?
That's a great question. I'll vote for it. Mm-hmm. I really I haven't seen the issue come forward before, so I have no track record on what anybody else will say.
Yeah.
But it will be interesting because there will be individuals, characters, you know, Representative LeVar Christensen, I think, will be an interesting mercurial vote to see kind of how
sort
he
of
feels about the issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Jim, Medicaid expansion. What are we going to see?
So we got, we apparently have three bills. We've got the Dunnigan, horrendous, feeble Utah, spend a lot more money, cover a lot fewer people. Apparently, Representative Ward has the governor's old Healthy Utah, and Senator Davis's bill, which is stop all the arguing, take full Medicaid expansion, start the money flowing in tomorrow. That passed 5-1 in a committee, and will be heard on the full floor. I predict that Davis is going to win. Dunnigan is going down in flames. And Ward will never be heard from again. But I'm lying about it.
I'm guessing you view this issue differently, Dan.
Oh, I just don't know where it's going to go.
Do you think Dunnigan's is not
We're trying to find money right now, right? Uh-huh. So we're short on money today for existing programming. Medicaid growth, which was at almost $37 million, just for serving current Medicaid population, $37 million.
Mm-hmm.
So we're searching the couches. We've been looking in between the cushions, trying to find this extra money. Add to that the idea of spending additional money. I think it's going to be a tough sell for all of the bills.
Yeah, tough that way. Kind of interesting because, you know, we have the strongest economy in the nation right now.
Yeah.
And it says something about our revenue sufficiency. In other words, that our tax code doesn't mirror economic performance.
Well, we're seeing erosion of the tax code.
Yeah.
I mean, you see online sales transactions, for example, shifting away money from states and revenues just because people shop online.
We narrow the base by taking most of it off the
food. Absolutely right. That's exactly right.
I could use this as a gripe, and I'll keep it short. My friends in Trolley Square at Sam Weller's bookstore, been around, brick and mortar. They sell a book. It's one amount plus the 5.5% state sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon comes out, sells that same book to somebody in Utah, zero sales tax. So we put a penalty on our local businesses, and you know what that adds up to every year? $200 million that the state of Utah gives away to these, mostly to these giant corporations. They're Kicken and Sean and have hired the Shawkin, and they are hired the best lobbyist in Washington to not see this fairness come about. It is a catastrophe. And Utah has a bill that may pass this time that may have an effect on
this
that.
This is Senator Bramble's bill.
We heard it today. It's actually somebody else's.
Oh, okay. Okay, Jim, I just want to ask you, up on the Hill, you have some bills that are passing this session?
No.
Okay. Dan McKay. Representative McKay, do you have some bills that are passing this session?
Probably 10 that are my bills, and then, you know, maybe another 10 or 11 Senate bills.
That speaks volumes, doesn't it?
I got a few that might pass, but...
You've been making a difference, Jim.
He runs really big, controversial, difficult to talk
about
issues.
They get people thinking.
He doesn't take anything easy, right?
Uh-huh.
And so in that respect, I will take my hats off to him. It is easy to vote against his bills, though. So in that respect, I will take it that way. So.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined by Representative Dan McKay and State Senator Jim DeBacchus. Let's talk about the presidential race. A few very, very local things happened recently. We learned that we are hosting in Salt Lake City, Utah, a Republican debate. Who would have thought?
I love it.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody wants to talk about...
Tickets.
You know, tickets and how do I get in? I've gotten so many messages from people. You got to get me in as though I have some special connection with the RNC. But that being said, James Evans is the name that everybody has vilified for one reason or another. But I got to be honest, he led the charge to kind of move this thing forward so that our caucus meetings counted as a presidential straw poll. And awarded some delegates. I mean, it really is groundbreaking that made us relevant.
Jim, what do you know about this debate?
GFK was the last one.
Yeah,
GFK.
And do we know where it's going to be held yet?
I heard this, that the place they were going to have it is so small that the Democrats were going to have their big debate party there, and they can't have it. So they're still looking around for a location. Maybe it'll be announced
a small place right away, like the Vivint Smart Home Arena or okay. The Delta Center.
We had another – oh, I love that Salt Lake City will be the center of attention
I do
for
too.
That night.
I mean, to have that state. Clown car and, stopping in Salt Lake and have them and pile out, all, how much fun is that?
All the great things you're saying about the head of the Republican Party, James Evans, I will just say that I think this had almost – a huge part to deal with our accessibility as a state and with our competency to feature a great Republican-led state.
And we have great public venues and private venues that could host this thing.
I don't know how true it is, but I was told behind the scenes that it came down between Phoenix and Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
We represent better.
Scheme is better here.
Yeah, it is beautiful. Okay, another thing that was sort of a local touch. I was actually stunned to see the caliber of elected officials, community leaders who came out endorsing Donald Trump this week. We had Stuart Adams, Ralph Okerlund, Stan Parrish, just to drop a few names. That was something else.
It was something.
Yeah. So commentary.
Because none of us have been Trump fans.
It is the same thing that I have been saying
here he comes.
Since I don't know how long.
I know it was Kevin.
You almost hear the car starting, right? That he's going
to
come
running. I've got a response to you.
Natalie, smell the coffee. You don't have to drink it. Just smell it. I've been saying it for so long. Our mainline kind of normal Republicans are just out of touch with the main beat of the Republican hierarchy that they have allowed to flourish. And now, you know what? You created this monster. You live with it.
Okay, I'm so excited to hear your response, Dan. Here's my response.
Okay, right.
Number one, Trump is not my guy. I don't share his values. I don't believe in his temperament. And I don't think he has the experience to do this job. And if you haven't read the article in The Economist magazine that goes through his business past and shows how his business decisions track with the stock market or with real estate market in New York, he's not that great of a businessman. So just a point there. Second point, a Rubio Kasich ticket would capture the imagination of Republicans in this country, and I think it's coming, and I think it will prevail.
Even now?
I think it will prevail.
Good.
How? That's the problem, is you go through the process.
These guys are doing their math wrong, the Okerlunds and the Parrot. They're trying to jump on a winning team, but it's the wrong team, and they should be rallying to get the right team, is my point.
Yeah,
the main thing we need is for Ted Cruz to get out of this race so that those votes can make their way to Rubio.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz votes are going to Donald. That's where the math gets wrong here. Those are worked up crazy people. They're not going to go to the establishment candidate.
No way. The establishment candidate, by the way, is fellow Tea Partier Marco Rubio. So don't get this like he's sold out and he's the Jeb Bushes of the party. You
so
know?
The lonely thing for me, and I know this will be true for many moderates, is if Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are the final, I'm going to go in a closet and just get – I don't know what I'm going to do, Jim.
You
I
might vote
so
for
depressed.
Donald Trump?
No. But I don't want to vote for Senator Clinton.
See, what will be interesting here, this is a twist. I talked to Senator Okerlund. There is not a better, more decent, more honorable guy than Ralph Okerlund in this whole state.
Agreed.
I mean, he just is salt of the earth, and he's heading up this clown car of the Trump campaign. So if you read what he said, you know, I think he's just showboating. And I'm making this up kind of, but paraphrasing what he said. But as it gets closer to the election, he's going to moderate out. He's going to use his experience. He's going to become a reasonable candidate. The question is, will Utah buy into that?
Yeah. I think that Trump's values will fail him, okay, as it becomes more and more clear who he is, what he represents, what his past is. Republicans
How could it be more clear? Everyone's talking about it.
I know.
I'm trying to swallow the mess that Jim is giving me, and I unfortunately
you're kind of saying you think he's right.
He might be right.
Yeah. Well, I when I go into that closet and have to pick between Senator Clinton and Donald Trump, you know, my husband joked with me. He's a Democrat. But he joked with me. Would you want to move to Canada? It's that bothersome to him.
Everyone goes. Every president. Okay. If I had a dollar for every time after every presidential election, I might move to Canada.
I moved to Canada. Okay. Let's go to SCOTUS, the U.S. Supreme Court, and Scalia's replacement. I am so disappointed from the political middle because I thought there was an opportunity here to make some progress. You guys are going to look at me like I'm nuts. I live in an ideal bubble.
But that's why we love you.
Okay, well,
yeah,
you know.
You represent
you.
So much of what is not
kind,
good about our
in thing. His final State of the Union address, President Clinton said, if I have one regret, it's that the acrimony has gotten worse, not better, during my presidency. And if I had the talent of Lincoln or Roosevelt, maybe I could have done better, but I'm going to keep trying. So he now has this opportunity to appoint a Scalia replacement. I think he should be marching to Capitol Hill and finding that compromise and have a victory for this country. And it took 30 seconds and we weren't there.
I don't think it matters who he nominates the first time. It will be the second or the third nominee that will be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's my bet.
Can't be a second or third nominee. Orrin Hatch, Mike Lee, the entire judiciary has said there will be no confirmation vote. There will be no hearing. There will be, Orrin Hatch said, no meeting between me and anybody that Barack Obama nominates.
Yeah, this is
so
the problem.
This is our system. Look, they're making it up. The Constitution says whatever the sacred Constitution, the one that Mike Lee pivots on, that when he breathes, eats. There's nothing in there that says in a lame duck. It says the president picks. The president nominates, and if they want to vote them down, okay. But look what's going to happen. It's going to be 4-4 for a year or a year and a half. So the complete stalling and miserably in the legislative session and in the executive branch, because it's lame duck anyway, as well as the president, they won't let him do anything. Now we're going to add the Supreme Court to the utter, complete lack of machinery. That is just indefensible.
Dan, there's loyalty to politics rather than loyalty to the Constitution. I have no idea how we think that because you're in the last year of elected office, you are irrelevant.
Okay, I'll make this conversation interesting, not by just jumping on the bandwagon. Look, the Constitution says the president shall nominate and the Senate shall advise and consent. That is the law.
Uh-huh.
If you can't get the advice and consent of the Senate, like the Constitution says, how is that violating the Constitution?
But,
I agree with you that it should be able to get
why
done.
Why they should react to a nominee, not to the fact that he nominates in his last year. They should react to a nominee.
If the president had not been so partisan and so difficult throughout the last 7 years... And I'm not saying that the Republicans are right either.
This is why we have Donald Trump, Jim. because there's so much pent up anger and frustration.
Dump.
What if he nominated Orrin Hatch?
No, he wouldn't. There's not enough time to make a legacy on that.
Oh, I forget. We're supposed to have gripes. You guys got to give me your 10-second gripes.
My 10-second gripe, the Senate Tax Committee turned down my proposal, which would have taxed everybody making $250,000 and above and put a 1% tax on them, would have raised $177 million. It would have got us back to Huntsman days, $177 million a year.
That's a gripe.
Great tax.
Quick gripe, Dan.
The weather is beautiful, and I'm inside.
And you're inside. That's fair. A lot of people are feeling that way lately. I get a gripe next time. We're out of time. I'm Natalie Gochner. This has been Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.